Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 24th, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Hippie Hippie Shake, Ultrasound versus CT Scan for Diagnosing Renal Colic. The guest skeptics today are Dr. Tony Sapol and Dr. Spencer Wright. Now, Tony, of course, is the chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Arkansas. Welcome back to the SGEM, Tony.
Thanks, Ken. Glad to be here again.
And Spencer is a PGY3 resident in the EM program at the University of Arkansas. Spencer, why don't you tell the SGEM audience a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Dr. Milne. Thanks for having us on the show. I'm Spencer Wright, and I'm a PGY3 emergency medicine resident at UAMS. I did my training or my medical school in UAMS as well, and I'm originally from Arkansas and pretty much enjoy all things outdoors.
Yeah, I noticed in your picture that I found on the internet, you're holding a very large fish.
It was moderate size.
Thanks very much for doing this so close to American Thanksgiving. I understand it's a super big holiday down south. And you guys, are you doing anything special? Traveling, going to see family?
Well, actually, Ken, I've got a bunch of people coming to my place, and a lot of travel, a lot of football, tons of food. As a matter of fact, overeating is the norm for Thanksgiving. And I know that Canadians probably don't think that Americans overeat ever, but it occurs on Thanksgiving. And then the other thing I didn't realize you guys didn't know about was the day after Thanksgiving, there's Black Friday, which is one of the probably the largest shopping day of the year, where you get great prices on just about everything, but you might have to run over a couple of your friends in order to get it.
Well, I've done a little research, of course, some background material on American Thanksgiving. And looking up American Thanksgiving, I summarized it into 5 points. And maybe you can comment on these points. That there's a lot of travel. In fact, more travel on the Thanksgiving weekend than any other time of the year.
Yeah, that makes sense. More than Christmas and 4th of July and some of the other big holidays that we have here in the States.
And the second thing was you guys lie down on the couch and watch a lot of football. Are you guys cheering for any particular team?
No, just football, man. That's all that matters.
Okay.
And then always the Cowboys.
Oh, the Cowboys, Spencer. Okay, and number three is you guys eat a lot of food. You get turkey with all the fixings, sweet potatoes, and maybe pumpkin or apple pie?
Oh, yeah. Well, any kind of pie will do. And then, you know, the thing about turkeys, man, is you can do them any way you want. You can brine them, smoke them, bake them, beer can turkey them, and then I love some fried turkey.
Fried turkeys.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Number four, lots of shopping. I think you mentioned this whole idea of Black Friday. Is that where people line up outside of Walmarts and wait to buy a 32-inch screen TV for $50 off?
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. We're Arkansas is the home of Walmart. The Walton family lives in Northwest Arkansas, and you can't go anywhere in this state without running into a Walmart. But yeah, you might get maybe $55 off that 32-inch screen TV. The discounts tend to be fairly deep.
Only if you camp out all night.
That's right. You got to have some free time.
Now, the fifth and maybe the most important is it's lots of time with your family.
Yeah, depending on who your family is, that could be the most important point, but not always.
Well, why don't we get started with a case scenario to launch this podcast? And Spencer, you've got a case for us. Could you go through that?
I do. So the case that we have involves a patient that we've all seen multiple times, doing a little Thanksgiving theme to it just to spice things up a bit. So the case is we have a 36-year-old previously healthy white male as attending his family's Thanksgiving supper. He begins developing waves of right flank pain associated with vomiting. One of the relatives suggests it might be food poisoning. This does not go over well with the matriarch of the family. A second relative suggests he has probably been drinking too much, which leads to another argument among some family members. Another relative chimes in, who is a nurse, and suggests that it could be renal colic, and suggests he goes to the emergency department for assessment. He arrives at the ED doing that hippie hippie renal colic shake. So he is clearly not comfortable in shifting around. He describes the pain as sharp, stabbing, and that has progressively become worse since onset. He says that over the last couple of hours, he has felt that it is radiating down towards his groin. The pain has been associated with nausea and vomiting, denies seeing any blood in his urine, and has not experienced any pain with urination. There has been no diarrhea, denies having a fever or history of renal colic. The ibuprofen he took last night provided some temporary pain relief, but the pain came right back.
All right, Tony, why don't you give us some background information on renal colic?
So, Ken, we've covered renal colic a number of times on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, including a randomized controlled trial done in France looking at the use of tamsulosin for the expulsion of distal ureteral stones. As you recall, that was episode number 4, getting unstoned. And I have to say, the guest skeptic there was quite special.
Who was that, I wonder?
I can't remember, but I'll look it up. This small study of only 129 patients showed there was no benefit to tamsulosin over a placebo.
And then we covered again in episode number 32, Stone Me. And again, I think we had a fantastic guest skeptic. Now, this was a Cochrane systematic review looking at fluids and diuretics for renal colic. It was done by my evidence-based medicine mentor, Dr. Andrew Worster, the genius that started BEAM, and taught me that when it comes to EBM, the answer could always be, it all depends. This systematic review only had 2 small studies which met inclusion criteria, and the conclusion was no reliable evidence was available to support the use of fluids or diuretics to treat renal colic.
And the last time we reviewed renal colic was another Cochrane systematic review by Zhu and his crew. The bottom line was that tamsulosin was useless in most emergency department patients with ureteral colic unless their stone size was larger than 4 millimeters.
Well, this time we're not going to be talking about renal colic treatment, but rather diagnostic strategies. So do you think you could give us the clinical question we're trying to answer?
Yeah, so our clinical question today is, in patients presenting to the emergency department with suspected renal colic, is ultrasound as effective as CT as a diagnostic tool?
And Spencer, let's bring you back into this. What's the reference we're going to be using?
So the reference of the study that we're reviewing, it was titled Ultrasonography versus Computed Tomography for Suspected Nephrolithiasis. This was done by Smith and Vineman and their crew. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, but it was this year, volume 371, pages 1100 to 1110.
So Spencer, let's go through the PICO statement. What was the population in this study?
So the population was, there was 2,759 patients aged 18 to 76 years of age in the emergency department setting from 15 geographically diverse academic emergency departments. The intervention in the study was ultrasonography with comparison to computed tomography. The outcomes measured, so the primary outcomes were 30-day incidence of high-risk diagnosis with complications related to missed or delayed diagnosis and 6-month cumulative radiation exposure. Secondary outcomes looked at were serious adverse events, related serious adverse events, pain, return ED visits, hospitalizations, and diagnostic accuracy.
So Tony, I want to turn to you and ask you, what were the author's conclusions from this paper?
So Ken, they concluded that initial ultrasonography was associated with lower cumulative radiation exposure than initial CT without significant differences in high-risk diagnoses with complications, serious adverse events, pain scores, return ED visits, or hospitalizations.
So when we're looking at a randomized control trial, we have 11 questions to probe the literature. And so I'm going to run through those 11 questions and alternate with you. Question number 1, the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes, that is correct. All of the patients in the study were from the ED setting only. So the answer to that one is yes.
Question 2, the patients were adequately randomized?
They were. They used a computerized randomization strategy in a 1-to-1-to-1 fashion.
Question 3, was the randomization process concealed?
Yes, it was. Randomization was performed with the use of a Renuni function in SAS software at the study website. After assignment, the patient's care during the emergency department visit at the time of enrollment was managed at the discretion of the treating physicians, including decisions about further imaging and the treatment and disposition of the patients.
Question 4, were the patients analyzed in the groups which they were randomized?
Well, Ken, I'm sure your SGEM listeners know this is also called the intent to treat analysis, which is critical for maintenance of randomization. And the answer to this question is yes, they did.
Question number 5, the study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
The answer to this is no. Patients whom the treating physician considered to be at high risk for serious alternative diagnosis or pregnant were not eligible.
Question 6, the patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors.
The answer to this one, Ken, is yes. And if I can indulge the audience, remember, always look at table 1. That's a shortcut to finding the answer to this question.
Question 7, all participants, were they unaware of their group allocation?
Yes, you cannot blind who got which diagnostic study.
Question number 8, all groups were treated equally except for the intervention.
So Ken, we're unsure about the answer to this one. They don't specify the treatment and follow-up decisions based on imaging method used and the findings of those studies.
Question number 9, was the follow-up complete, i.e. was at least 80% available for analysis in both groups?
Yes, the follow-up was complete. There was only 113 patients, which was 4.1%, that were lost to follow-up.
Question 10, all patient important outcomes were considered?
The answer to this one's yes, Ken, and not only patient important outcomes, but ED physician important outcomes as well.
And the final question, question number 11, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
The answer to this is yes. High-risk diagnosis with complications was not statistically significant. P-value of 0.3. The study was statistically significant in regards to cumulative radiation exposure, the p-value of less than 0.001.
Well, that's a great segue into the key results, so why don't we emphasize those now? Tony, what was the key result or the primary outcome in this study?
So Ken, with regards to high-risk diagnoses with complications, there was absolutely no difference, and that's really probably the thing we all want to know. Is it safe to perform this study, and are we missing anything important? And with ED ultrasound, there were only 6 events, zero, which is 0.3% of this population. With radiologists performed ultrasound, 3 patients, again, 0.3% of the population. And for CT, 2 patients, or 0.2% of the population. And obviously, this is not statistically significant.
Well, when we're considering benefit, we always like to look at the flip side and harm. So Spencer, what about the potential harm? Everybody's more and more concerned about radiation exposure.
Right. So that was the harm that they looked at in this study was radiation exposure with the different imaging modalities. They measured this in millisieverts, and they looked at the difference with results of you get more radiation exposure with CT. So for ED ultrasound, the average radiation exposure was 10.1. With radiology ultrasound, 9.3, and with CT, 17.2. Quite a bit of difference there. P-value of 0.001, which is statistically significant.
So one of their secondary outcomes was also serious adverse events. Tony, were there any differences there?
Ken, once again, no differences between the 3 arms of this trial. The p-value for the differences was 0.5.
And how about how long people spent in the emergency department? And again, this may be also a physician-oriented outcome.
The difference in length of stay with the longest time was having the radiology do an ultrasound, and this was measured in hours. So with an ED ultrasound, the average length of stay was 6.3 hours. The radiology ultrasound, 7 hours, and with CT, 6.4 hours. This had a p-value of less than 0.001.
How about bounce backs? How about return ED visits? Was there any differences at 1 week, 1 month, or 6 months?
Once again, Ken, no difference whatsoever.
How about admitting people to hospital after ED discharge? Was there any difference in those parameters?
There was also not any difference at either 1 week, 1 month, or 6 months.
Well, Tony, can you talk to me about the accuracy for diagnosing renal colic with sensitivity and specificity?
So Ken, again, really no difference here. The sensitivity was 85% and the specificity was 50%.
So Tony, why don't you give some expert commentary on this trial?
Sure, Ken. So first of all, I just want to say that, you know, this is one of the ED trials that every emergency physician needs to know. This is potentially practice changing for a lot of us that practice in both academic centers and rural centers and community centers. The trial was a well-done randomized controlled trial with a high level of validity, as we've discussed. And quite frankly, it's unlikely that this trial will be repeated. And similar to when the Nexus trial came out, it supports what many of us suspected already, and that is that we could use bedside ultrasound for the diagnosis of renal colic or renal stones in the emergency department.
So the study did not comment on whether groups were treated differently with regards to disposition, treatment, and follow-up based on results from different imaging modalities. It should be noted that there were exclusions for obesity in both men and women, which could significantly affect the test characteristics of U.S. patients, especially after Thanksgiving.
Listeners, I really think this study provides enough evidence that shows there's no harm in using ultrasound for suspected nephrolithiasis, and you have the added benefit of reducing radiation exposure. This evidence should and will impact clinical care, as physicians should reduce CT utilization in favor of ultrasound to reduce radiation exposure without added risk by using bedside ultrasound.
So we always like to compare the author's conclusions to what we've decided. And what I've put down here is that the author's conclusions are very similar to our conclusions, in that ultrasound for suspected renal colic reduces cumulative radiation exposure without significant difference in bad outcomes as compared to CT. But we need a bottom line. And Spencer, I'm going to turn to you. Come on, you're the EM resident in training. You want the information fast and quick. What's the answer? What's the bottom line?
So that's what all EM physicians want to know, is what's the bottom line of this study. And it's basically that bedside emergency department ultrasound is safe and has several advantages over CT for the diagnosis of kidney stones.
Perfect. Okay, and let's resolve the case. And it's the 36-year-old man who presented looking like he had renal colic, and we get an ultrasound. And this confirms a 4-millimeter stone in the distal ureter. His pain and vomiting has settled in the department with intravenous ketorolac and ondansetron. We write him a prescription for analgesia and an antiemetic, and you also arrange a follow-up with a urologist and provide him with strict return precautions. He thanks you and heads back to his Thanksgiving dinner. Tony, I'm going to turn to you now and say, let's put this in the big picture. How are we going to apply this information clinically?
So Ken, I think what we can take away here is that ED physicians should strongly consider ultrasound for suspected nephrolithiasis when it's appropriate. We could be doing our patients a favor by reducing their radiation exposure and not putting the patient at any increased risk or harm.
And so then the final part is, how do we bring this research to the patient's bedside and actually talk to them in English instead of medical? And so I would tell the patient that it looks like you have a kidney stone because you're doing this hippy shake, and we should start with an ultrasound to lessen your exposure to radiation. Radiation can increase the chance of you developing cancer later in life, and we don't want to cause any harm. If there is a further concern that arises, we can always get a CAT scan, but the ultrasound is just as good at diagnosing kidney stones, and we may be able to get you out of the emergency department faster and back to that Thanksgiving dinner. All right, now it's time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Dylan Morris, an EM resident from Portland, Oregon. This is his second win, and as such, will receive the Double Strength Cool Skeptical Prize. And gentlemen, I understand that Keener, which from a Canadian standpoint means that person at the front of the classroom who always had their hand up answering the questions, you know, was very, very keen and interested and wanted to be involved. But Keener really doesn't translate well to the American audience.
That's right, Ken. In America, we call those individuals gunners.
Gunners. No wonder. Yeah, you see, in Canada, we don't have a lot of gunners.
Well, we're in Arkansas, and I don't know, Spencer, you probably have a couple guns yourself.
We love our guns.
So Dylan, the Keener, the gunner, they knew the household device that was commonly used in cardiac arrest to provide oxygenation and ventilation in the 1500s was a bellows. The device could be applied both orally or rectally, and when applied rectally, smoke from the fireplace was used. Rob Orman, this is where the saying, blowing smoke up your ass, came from. But what's the Keener contest this week?
What is the largest kidney stone ever removed according to the Guinness Book of World Records?
If you know the answer, then send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com. use Keener in the subject line. The first person to correctly provide me with this answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, I want to mention three upcoming conferences. We have Ski Beam, January 26th to 28th in the Rocky Mountains of British Columbia. The second one is Shock and Resuscitation Conference in Montreal, May 1st to 3rd. And then finally, Smack Chicago, June 23rd to June 26th. Well, thank you, Tony and Spencer, for doing the show.
Absolutely, Ken. We had a great time.
Yes. Thanks, Dr. Milne, for having us on the show.
You guys have a great Thanksgiving. Safe travels. Hope you have a great time with your family. Don't overeat, of course. And Spencer, you're the special guest. Tony's been on the show before, and anytime we get a renal colic paper, we're going to invite him back, it seems. But since this is your first time, would you be kind enough to give the SGEM tagline?
I sure will. So listeners, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week. Happy Thanksgiving.